3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Woo! Happy Friday. Welcome to Mad Games Live. We made it through another week. This week has been interesting, much better than last week and all the storms in Texas. So I know that Texas has been getting good weather. Arkansas is happy again. Hopefully everything is smoothing out by now. Grab a beer, grab your glass of wine. Welcome. We're going to have an exciting show today with some great guests. I already see that Sharon is with us, Amanda Miller. She is going to field questions to my cell phone. So find Amanda Miller, my favorite flatbed broker out of Alabama. She's going to be your question fielder. So before we get into our topic, we have two sponsors today. So we have JJ Keller, and here's what you would hire JJ Keller for. JJ Keller is designed for small, mid-size, very large trucking companies. They've been around for a long time in the trucking industry. They are consultants. You go to them for safety, training, hiring drivers, managing them, hours of service, everything you can think of trucking-wise. JJ Keller is your solution. Go to jjkellersafety.com. Our second sponsor for today is one you all know well, which is Swan Leap TMS, whom I love. I love them so much that they gave all of our users, all of our audience, not users, but audience, they gave us 6 months free use of their TMS. Thank you, Swan Leap. Just go to swanleap.com/madgains, and you'll see the little link for your 6 months free. And now, I always forget to tell people, you can watch this. I like people going to YouTube. Many people are on LinkedIn. You can watch this episode on madgainslive.com. That's my new website. And Lean Marketing, Lean Solution Groups developed it for me. It's beautiful. You can watch the shows and past shows right on that website. So let's get started with our show, because we had a compensation show about a month ago, and we talked about a lot of individual contributors' compensation, having that difficult discussion with your boss about getting promotions and how to negotiate salary. Now we've decided to turn it a bit and talk about the company's management leadership and designing a compensation model that is unique to your business, fits your culture, and is more edgy than these old school, let's just pay them a crap salary and commission, just let them grind until they burn out, which is getting to be old to everyone. So I want to introduce you guys to our guest. First is our compensation expert, Beth. Hi, Beth. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Cassandra. How are you?
I'm very excited for this episode. Where are you? I love the balcony and the beautiful high ceilings. It looks wonderful.
We've been hanging out. We bought this summer, since we can't go anywhere, we bought a house on the Kankakee River in Chicago.
Oh, nice.
So this is our river house. So I ski-daddled out here for the weekend, get an early start on the weekend. So this is where I am. So if you see anybody walking upstairs, it's my husband. That's his man cave loft.
Good for him.
I told him, hopefully he fall asleep in his chair and snore in the background, but I'll meet him too.
And could you introduce yourself to everybody? I know you've been on the show before, but for those of you who do not know who you are.
Yep, I'm Beth Carroll, and I am a compensation consultant. That is a real thing. I've been doing this for 23 years now. I started with a big HR consulting firm and was with them for 10 years. And that's where I learned to do what I do. And then in 2007, I started working with CRST Logistics. That was my first freight broker client. And I just counted it up. I have now worked with 192 transportation and logistics companies. Yeah.
Wow. And you basically help people, you know, figure out how to pay their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the easiest way to say it?
That's the easy way. Anybody that you want to have on variable compensation, where it's based on pay for performance, I would help figure out how to do that, right? And just like you said at the beginning, the old days of just, you know, figuring out what the commission rate should be, those are gone, right? You need to do something a little bit more creative than just figuring out whether it's, you know, 10% or 12% or whatever, because the world is changing and that kind of approach is not going to work anymore. So I help companies be a little bit more sophisticated in terms of their management of compensation.
So true. We have Michael Caney with us, who's co-hosting this episode, and I think he's going to co-host some more with me. Michael, where are you? Because I see you have like an industrial look behind you.
Looks very trendy. Yeah, I'm actually in Dallas, Texas for the weekend with my family, where I lived for, I don't know, 35-ish years before I moved to Chattanooga. So it's nice to be back in Dallas and on this episode with good friends. I'm glad I'm in Dallas this week, not last week. So it's thawed here. We can drink the water.
You don't have to boil the water.
Yeah, no, there's no boiling water. The sun is shining outside. So it's a good weekend to be in the big D.
I love it. And then we have KJ. And KJ, are you in Colorado?
I am. Evergreen, Colorado, just outside of Denver, above the Red Rocks.
Because what is the thing behind you? Is that a clock? The black thing on the wall?
That's a belt.
It's a wrestling belt, right, KJ?
Yeah. Well, Whoa. It's a BMF belt. It's a replica of a BMF belt. I don't know if I can cuss on the show, but it's the baddest MF-er belt. So
you can definitely cuss on this show.
Okay, so
which one's your wallet, KJ?
Pardon?
Which one's your wallet? The one that says bad motherfucker.
Yep. So
did you actually like wrestle somebody for that? Or did
no,
you
No, I did it. No, yes, we bought it. The employee of the month would have it on their desk, get $100. And now we're all working from home, so I posted it back there.
I like that. I want that belt. That sounds nice. Someone joined us and said WWE. What is WWE? Maybe it means WWF.
Yeah, this is for
very cool.
Yeah. It's a different organization.
Next, Exit Logistics is with us. Oh, he says I look amazing. I love him. And I would like to tell you, they are in Dallas as well, and they survived, and they keep booking freight and doing their thing. So I noticed I checked in with him last week to make sure that Next Exit was doing well. And then Bill joins us. He says, Cassandra, can you help me get a raise? Okay. Michael, you are my co-host. Where do you want to start? I'm very excited about these topics because some of them I don't even know a lot of what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I think probably the best place to start before we get into all the hot button issues is probably just design. The biggest thing that I learned from Beth when I started working with her was how to think about the role, the value of a role, and comp design. So I went to her trying to tweak and fix little things. And what if we do this? And what if we do that? And she kind of really helped me take a step back and rethink those things. And so I'll say that she's done several plans for me. And I actually did a little work with her when I was between gigs one time. And we've never done the same thing twice in the same company.
Interesting.
So I think the biggest, I hope a big takeaway that people get is that there isn't one way to do this. And there isn't one way to do this for your business, right? And so one of the things that hopefully we'll talk about today is you shouldn't change as a reaction, but you should plan to change. Like your plans are going to change. Like your compensation is going to change. And you should just plan for it to be now for 6 months or a year or 2 years and change. So I think a good place to start really, Beth, is probably let you give the speech that you've given probably over 1,000 times, right? And just talk about role design and kind of what you want to say to the world in terms of how to think about those things.
Sure. Thanks, Michael. I'd say probably the biggest thing is begin at the beginning, right? So think about where you want to go from a company perspective. What's your strategy? What are your objectives? And how do you want to organize your people? Define your roles. Define what good is. It is amazing to me how many companies don't do that, right? They have no comprehension of what good looks like for their employees. Is it 8 loads a day? Is it 25,000 a month in gross margin? How many new customers need to be brought on? You know, what do those new customers look like? Just define what it is you want people to do and then pay them to do that. Mm-hmm. It's actually not that hard. And once you realize that there's lots of different ways that you can pay people, that you can go beyond just doing a commission, then you can do whatever you want with it.
When you say go beyond just doing a commission, I think, Beth, everyone thinks that variable comp equals commission.
Correct. Yep.
Right. And so maybe talk a little bit about what is variable compensation. Like a lot of people probably never have heard total target comp or TTC. Like if KJ is recruiting in the tech world, that's very common, right? KJ, like we talk about total comp.
They say OTE.
OTE, yeah, on target earnings at plan.
Yep.
We don't talk about that. I mean, that's what we're after. Concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, think about, let me talk with about terminology first. So everybody uses the word commission and they use it wrong. So what you think you mean when you use the word commission, chances are that's not the right use of that word. So generically, my preferred term is to call it variable compensation or incentive compensation, because that's all encompassing. It's basically any compensation that you pay to an employee that goes beyond their salary or their hourly wage, right? So it's something that is based on performance, that's based on presumably individual performance, and varies with performance. It can be delivered through a commission. So a commission, the technical definition of a commission is a percentage of margin or a percentage of revenue. Okay. And so if you're calculating it that way, then it's okay to use the word commission, but you may not actually be calculating it that way. If you're paying somebody a bounty for new customer acquisition, that's not a commission. It's variable comp, it's incentive comp, but it's not a commission. And a lot of times there's another word out there that I try to avoid as well. It's bonus. Because a lot of people hear the word bonus and they think that that means paid once at the end of the year, not a whole lot of money, if the company's profitable and if my manager likes me. That's not technically what a bonus is, right? So goal-based incentive plans, which are technically bonuses, can be just as lucrative, just as variable, just as individualized, paid monthly, right? So all of the good things that people associate with commission plans, you can get all of that stuff from other forms of incentive that don't tie you into a mathematical rate that connects gross margin dollars and pay. That help? Is that what you want me to do?
I mean, I think so.
So KJ is our expert recruiter. Everybody goes to him when they're looking for a job, or companies hire him to help them source people. So KJ, what have you been seeing in the industry when it comes to bonuses? Do you agree with Beth that sometimes when you're negotiating, it's not always the end of the year compensation, or if your manager likes you or not, which is actually, Beth, what I always thought it was too, which I kind of hate.
I think it's fascinating that every company does a little different. I think sometimes when there's new brokerages or there's new non-asset-based companies, you know, they might come to me and say, hey, what is this large company doing? And they're trying to kind of rinse and repeat instead of being more thoughtful and intentional about what's best for their organization. I also think sometimes the timing of when you get the payments is important. And I think a lot of people don't ask about that. You know, sometimes it's the month after you've done the commission. So, you know, for me, I think sometimes the faster companies pay is a little more enticing for some people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You actually, KJ, you raised a good point that I don't think we brought up at all in the last time. And that's when is something credited to the incentive plan? Yeah. There are a lot of companies, I think it's becoming less and less, and I hope so. They pay on, they call it paid-ins or collections or something like that.
Receivables, which
sets it way back in terms of timing from when the person did the activity that generated the money to when they actually collect it. My preference in transportation is to credit as early as you possibly can. So like shipment, yep, delivery, invoice, something before paid ins, because otherwise they're waiting way too long to get their money. Now, I know there's going to be managers out there that are jumping up and down. Well, then we're going to be paying them and we didn't get the money, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
If you have these people having any kind of a salary whatsoever, you already don't have a pure economic deal. So don't get your panties in a twist because you think you're messing up your pure economic deal, because it doesn't exist in the first place.
Yeah. Well, let's hit that, right, Beth, because what you just brought up is, you know, I've been through this with you a couple of times, and you when you first do design and you kind of are level setting, you know, one of the questions you like to ask is, well, do you pay salespeople to collect money? And it invariably, like a CEO or somebody will go, well, no. And you go, well, then why are you paying them to collect money? Right. And so compensation, credit dates, it forces a leadership team to go, what are we really paying people to do?
What do you want?
I mean, you took one of my businesses from being paid on receivables for years and years and years, and we went to invoice date. And you know, one of the things we looked at was we had a really good AR, we had a really good collection process, and we'd stopped some of the things that were happening at that company that allowed people to cheat the system. So we'd fixed all these things, but we were still paying people on receivables. Yeah. So we were trying to solve a management issue or an accounting issue with sales compensation,
which is not what it should be used for.
Which makes
I've really been messing up. I've been really messing up. My advice to clients has been pay on receivables. We do commission on paid invoices, because from a lawyer's perspective, I'm thinking about risk only, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, you know, there's so much screwy stuff that goes on. I want to mm-hmm. wait until the customer actually pays, and then we can pay out commission. And you've seen it, Michael. People play games in their TMS. People can engage with shippers. There's lots of sketchy stuff going on.
Yeah.
And you're destroying the motivation of the plan.
Yeah. And so what you're doing is you're telling your whole sales staff, some of who could really be badass salespeople, because one jackass did this one thing that cost us a whole bunch of money. I'm going to fundamentally demotivate you. Wow. And what you're telling your accounting department is, hey, sales will take it on the chin if you can't collect money. And you're telling your credit department, hey, sales will take it on the chin if you can't manage your credit department. So oftentimes what happens is companies grow, and they get to $70, $80, $100 million in that kind of mid-market space, and they don't have good credit management. Mm-hmm. Or they don't have they don't have the little credit limit thing on in their TMS. And so somebody's credit limit gets way out of whack, and they go, oh, mm-hmm. we'll just quit paying the salespeople.
Wow. KJ, do you see people when they're looking for jobs from a recruitment perspective, do they pay attention to these details? Like I know I'm thinking the same thing, Beth. I see Beth shaking her head and I'm thinking the same thing.
You answered the question perfectly. Yeah, you know, I think that what they look at, they want to find out, you know, what is OTE? So, you know, what is my base compensation? What is my commission? And then a good salesperson is going to know how do they make the commission? They don't ask when. So hope they enter some of it.
Because I've noticed, Beth and Michael might have experience with this too, is there be companies, and I make when I get hired by a company, of course, I make everything concrete. But I'll see in many offer letters where it will say, you know, company may change compensation terms at any point in time, which I would write that too. But it's interesting that people wouldn't want to know, you know, when are you getting paid? What is it based on? And also, when can you change these terms on me? Because everybody's kind of been in this spot where the company halfway through the year has changed your compensation terms. And you're like, what the fuck?
Cassandra, mm-hmm. you probably know better than I do legally on this, but my understanding has always been that companies can pretty much, you know, we're an at-will employee, you know, at-will hiring, whatever that terminology is, so that companies can do whatever they want, basically, mm-hmm. from a compensation mm-hmm. perspective, with some boundaries on that, right? Like we may talk about FLSA and stuff like that. You have to pay minimum wage and all that kind of stuff. But from an incentive design perspective, there's no legality in terms of sometimes they think it's a contract and it's not, they can change mm-hmm. it. So mm-hmm. you just have to be really careful. Like if you're in places like California or New York, there are some rules about if you're paying somebody using the strict definition of a commission that you have to have it documented. And there may be some carryover things that you have to pay them after they have left the company. So you have to be really careful. And that's also why I am so fussy about using that term. Because states apply different legal rules to commission plans versus goal-based incentive plans, or what they may call bonuses. So why tangle yourself up with a legal requirement if you're not really paying a commission?
Smart. And from a recruiting perspective, do people prefer hearing the word commission over bonus, or bonus over commission?
Commission.
I don't think they know the difference, but in the world, commission, I think, carries a lot of misapplied meaning that people perceive probably better than they do perceive the misapplied meaning to bonus.
So, and someone just brought, actually Vitaly brought this up, which is, can we talk about, basically he's saying, can we talk about something other besides sales representatives? Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great question. And I think that's the difference between commission and bonus. A lot of times if you're more operationally driven, then it may be a bonus, or they phrase it up as a bonus, and it's more commission on sales.
So sometimes, I think,
but not always, KJ.
Sure.
Yeah. I think there's two parts to that, Cassandra, that we can probably talk about. I want to circle back and just make one, I want to respond to one comment that got flashed up there about the issue around we're unsecured debt and we can't. So let's say you have somebody that's $1 million, right? They're $1 million contributor. And
hold on, Michael. I just, since I keep forgetting we're at a podcast. So the issue, Thomas Smiley says, the issue is that we are an unsecured debt. There's only a promise to pay. Customers simply cannot pay. Then what? We paid the carrier, the sales rep, but then the company doesn't get paid. Oh, I'm so glad Thomas did this. Okay, go for it, Michael.
Yeah, sorry. So no, that's absolutely correct. Is that salesperson going to get paid out on a multiple when you sell your business?
Because
when you drop 3, 4, 5, 6% to the bottom line of that $1 million a year in revenue, that salesperson, depending on the multiple and the market valuations and type of business, added multiples of value to your business. Running a credit department, a collection department, is not his responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Or hers.
You cannot like that I say that, but that's not his responsibility. Now, I pay on invoice. And I do clawbacks and chargebacks, and I have all kinds of things put in place where if your paperwork isn't right, and I do a credit review with our CFO every month, and we look at things quarterly, but I totally understand the comment, but that still isn't the salesperson's job. I worked at a company where I was on a draw versus commission, and if we had a claim that the insurance company didn't pay, I was responsible for the value of that claim to the same amount of commission.
Wow.
When they sold that business, none of those salespeople got the same type of multiple paid to them when they sold the business. So that's the thing. Like when you sign up to be a business owner with the ability to sell your business for tens of millions of dollars, you sign up for the responsibility to run that business and manage the cash flow. It is not your sales staff's responsibility. It just isn't.
Wow. So we're going to dive in. The other one was, I got sucked in because I guess I'm learning right now. I really am. You guys are completely blowing my mind. So the other question was, can we discuss other roles besides the sales roles and designing compensation, which I love, from Vitaly.
So that was the second part. Beth, can you talk about alignment? Because when we do this, we talk about if sales does this.
Yep.
Then what's ops participation? How should they share? What's that participation across all the support areas?
Well, you really have to think about the whole thing as a system, which is why I said at the beginning, begin at the beginning. So think about your structure and all of your different roles in the organization. And they all, I mean, even down to your accounting department, right? Everybody has some role to play in making your business successful. Define those roles and then align compensation to them, right? So I'm talking about, you can do incentive plans for IT and marketing and operations and outside sales, inside sales, pretty much everything that's out there. And if you do this right, then you've basically built like this three-dimensional puzzle where all of these roles are working together and they all hook in together and they drive a greater result. You also want to look at your cost of compensation in the same holistic fashion. Right. So don't look at every person as their own individual little P&L. I mean, it doesn't make any sense if you start talking about marketing or support roles to do that. You want to make sure that the whole system works and is functioning from an economic perspective that makes your business healthy.
Interesting. So I hate to go back to this hot topic, but Andrew Thiel, as we all know, one of my favorite people in Madtropolis, he said, you always pay the carrier and assume the risk and it's acceptable. The salesman or saleswoman likely isn't being comped on that one transaction to the carrier. Why not pay the sales rep? My mind's still kind of spinning on that point. So to go back to compensating for roles that are not in sales. One thing I'm going to throw in that's a little bit of a side note that drives me absolutely up the wall is when I hear roles like my roles in the legal department or accounting or basically it's legal and finance that we are a cost center. It's a little bit frustrating to be in that role because we feel like we do a lot of work to help support the teams and to make money. So when you're evaluating that type of role, Beth, what are you looking at? Are you looking at job descriptions, and especially if you give, do you give them bonuses as well?
Well,
in those types of roles?
I love that you asked the question, because I've really had to do, I've done a lot of projects in the last couple of years with trucking companies, and they like to have everybody in their organization be on an incentive plan, meaning everybody down to the receptionist. It helps manage the economics of the business when it goes up and down, right? And so for those kinds of roles, when you're talking about ones that are not production-based or sales-based, we tend to look at things like KPIs. I have a little KPI table that I use that will blend together statistics that you're measuring on a regular basis. So DSOs and average days to bill and things like that. For roles like yours, Cassandra, I would use MBOs. Okay. So an MBO is management by objective, where they will say, you know, Cassandra, your, you know, primary three things that we want you to accomplish this year are 1, 2, and 3. And each one of them is worth $10,000. And we're going to evaluate you at the end of the year to see whether you did it, you know, partially, fully, or better than. And that's going to determine how much of $30,000 you get. It doesn't work for masses of people. You can't do MBOs for, you know, huge quantities of people in the organization. But it is very applicable for senior leaders in the organization, and anybody who's got real strategic influence on projects. For the rest of the people that are in those kinds of roles, I've actually been developing something called a development scorecard. And it's like mini MBOs, but it actually helps people grow and develop in their position. So think about, you know, taking, have them sign up for a Udemy course so that they can improve their Excel skills. They complete a number of these things and it's like a bingo scorecard. And based on what they complete, that drives an incentive for them.
I love that.
You can also tie it to a raise. You can tie it to promotion. There's a lot. But this generation in particular wants to know, how do they get to the next level, right? So the more that we can turn it into like a thing that they have to do from like a gamification standpoint, check it off, check the box, fill in all these squares, do these things, it's going to make them feel like they've got a path that they can follow. And it's not just the same thing day in, day out. So I'm doing that with a lot of IT groups. And I did one for an energy consulting firm recently. So they
Oh, cool.
Energy consulting firm. So
I would definitely like to say that when I've taken over teams and when I work for companies, I would take over the teams, I would hire employees. And the first thing I noticed is that they didn't have what you call the scorecard or like the action plan. I would ask them, what do you want to do with your career? Where do you want to go? Even if you don't want to get promoted, maybe you want more money. But we can figure out how to get you there. And it's hard. It takes time as a leader to develop something like that. But what surprises me is how many people don't have those types of plans. And it's just up to the whim of the bosses. Like if they like me, I'll get promoted. I just keep working hard and I'll get promoted. And it's like, no, there could be more to that. There could be a lot more to that.
And if you give that structure to your managers, like, okay, fill in, pick four things that you want your person to do in each of the columns of like personal, professional development, business acumen, and process improvement. Pick four mm-hmm. things across three columns, mm-hmm. That's 12 things for them to do during the year. They get to pick six. There you go. That's it. But now mm-hmm. your managers actually have something that they can follow so that they can think about what do they want their people to be doing.
Tie it back to your goals for your department, tie it back to the values of your company. And I think it should be a two-way street. Like I've had people say, well, I really wanted to expand in this type of role. Well, we got to get you education. Mm-hmm. So we got to get you to conferences. We got to get you shadowing people and get you a mentor. So yep. It's like a two-way street with leadership as mm-hmm. well.
Yep. I think there's two things that you mentioned, Beth, that we could probably pick up on. And I'd love to hear KJ's opinion. One of the things you said is that people want to know, how do I move up? Right. The other thing too, and we've talked about this, is like, what's the definition of success? Something that I stole from you that I say all the time is, more is not a goal. Just do more. We'll pay you more. Well, more is not a goal, right?
Like, I hate how that vague crap.
Yeah. How do you quantify that goal? And so, you know, one of the things that we do when we onboard people is we take them through the deck that shows 1, 2, 3, like, what are the roles? How do you grow? What are production requirements? How does that work together? And there, a few years ago, there was a couple of primary questions that I started asking, which was, if sales does really well, how does the rest of the organization participate in that? And how do they feel good? And then also, how do I get salespeople to understand that because they are the tip of the spear, as we like to say, and because, you know, their prominence is so high and their variable comp is so high and they have so much ability to influence revenue, that they influence the way other people can get paid. And so, like, what I started learning is that by exposing the fact that there is variable compensation tied to operations that sales can directly influence, salespeople tend to feel a little bit more bought in than kind of that old school. This is where I want to get KJ's opinion. Rather than that old school, pay me a low base, convince them to bet on themselves. And, you know, it's unlimited, right? It's uncapped. You know, we started using levels and pay raises. And when you use different roles, you can kind of matrix those things. Hey, if this role doesn't work, we can put you over here in the OTE similar. KJ, are you seeing more of that in terms of what people are asking for? What, I mean, what is expectation in terms of what people want when they go somewhere and what owners are willing to do?
Great question. We started asking that of our clients a couple of years ago. You know, what does success look like in 6 months or a year? And it really starts getting them thinking about how does that person get promoted? How do they move up? And it allows us to give some insight to the candidates so they understand. And to Beth, your point earlier about wanting, you know, that this newer generation really wanted to know exactly how do they get there, that asking that question helps frame that up for them so they understand. And if there's not a lot of thought around the response from the client, then that doesn't help the candidate feel comfortable kind of getting into process with them. So I think the answer is part of it. Do you have another part of that question, Michael?
No, I think that was it, just in terms of, I think, how's it changing? What's the expectation that's changed? Like,
everyone wants to know what they are nowadays. I think that's what's changed, is everybody wants to know what's the expectations. And I think that, you know, customers and clients are framing that up better now.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Michael. I was going to go in another direction, so you should do your follow-up question.
What I was going to ask is, are you seeing a differentiation, or what does it look like, Beth, when you're working with clients of people that can define that versus people that go, I've actually really never thought about it? They all just kind of get in a room and do things and magically money shows up and I haven't really thought about it until there was 20 of them and now there's 100 of them and I have to think about it.
Right.
Because I used to be way overly critical, really. And I've come to think people are really trying their best to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And they just go from here to there. And now costs have increased, which we should circle back to that because there's a cost issue, right? And there's a way to deal with that that doesn't make stealing house accounts and all that kind of, that's really not what it is. There's a legitimate cost that goes up as revenue increases. Like, it is a legitimate cost. So Beth, what does it look like? You have a really good matrix, actually. People should email you and get it. Like the typical 0 to 10 million, like you box it out, right? On what is typical. Can you just kind of talk about that evolution a little bit and how people think about that?
Well, at the beginning, you don't know anything, right? So you're starting your company, you don't know how to set, you don't know what the goals are going to be. So you're going to have very simple approaches to everything. And then you're exactly right, Michael. I think most companies just sort of do it by the seat of their pants. And at some point they realize they actually have to define things. They have to sit down and think about, which is often when they've come to me and say, hey, we have a compensation problem. And they really, yes, they have a compensation problem, but that's not their primary problem. Their primary problem is they have a role definition problem and they have an accountabilities problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because they haven't sat down and thought about what do they actually want people to do and what are their standards? What are the standards that they have for what does good look like? What does great look like? They kind of know it, but they've never articulated it. So for those companies going through this process, helps them figure all that out, right? So it puts it in the framework of, we have to develop a new compensation plan. And I say, well, guess what, guys, you got to do all this stuff before you do that. So they do that and they end up with a compensation plan that now will work for them and be a strategic tool. Every now and then I bump into a company, I'm working with one right now, that really has their act together, right? So they've already done a lot of thinking about their KPIs. They're really, really super strong, but they just were not aware of different things that they could do from a compensation perspective, right? So everybody in the company, it's basically a pool and they're getting a percentage of the pool that they split up because that's all they knew how to do, right? And so they don't, I know it's like, this is going to be so easy for me because they're super smart. They already have like their business nailed down. They just didn't have the understanding of the breadth of compensation options that were available to them. Once I tell them, they're going to be like, okay, we got this. We're going and running and rocking and rolling.
Nice.
It's going to go. So
What do you mean by a role accountability? You said there's a role definition problem and then a role accountability problem. What's the accountability part?
Holding people to standards, right? Saying, hey, it's not, and this is the fundamental problem with a commission plan, right? So everybody loves commission plans because they're easy. They allow the person to define for themselves what good is, right? Because it's based on what they want to make. And so they're going to reverse engineer the math and they're going to say, okay, if I want to make $60,000 a year, this is how much I have to produce. That may or may not align with what the company expects of them. Right. So the company needs to create those standards and hold people accountable to those standards. And I hear this all the time. This is actually one of these days I'm going to write a book on just like management horror stories with from these companies that I've worked with. Like, do the good.
Didn't you already write a book?
I did write a book, but it's not about management horror stories. It's on. Okay,
keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you. But no, I'm going to do another one. Once I'm out of the business and I can, like, you know, share stories and not worry about people getting mad at me. But yeah, so thinking about there's some where, you know, managers are just really don't understand what it is they're expecting of their people or, you know, to be able to tell them or hold them accountable. So I have companies that have bad employees. They know they have bad employees. They will tell you they have bad employees.
Yep.
Like, well, then what do you think the rest of your company is going to think about that? If they see that you're willing to keep around this person who is just toxic in the company, it's destroying the entire company because management doesn't want to deal with that one person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen it so often. Michael, I'm shocked you don't have something to say about this.
Oh, topic. I do, but I was waiting to see if you still wanted to change directions because I have like so many things to say.
No, this is a good direction to go. We talked about this last week.
Well,
you kind of brought it up, Michael.
It's interesting. When I hired Beth, we hired her. The first time I hired her, we hired her to fix this problem. We had significant revenue tied to people that were not awesome to work with. And so what happens is, and this is what happens in a lot of commission-based companies, right? And this goes back to like income jail. We talked about this a bit with KJ, like people want to move and KJ's like, I can't move you. You make $200,000 a year and you're a salesperson. They don't give away $200,000 a year jobs. They just don't give those away, right? Which is, you know, you have a person that reverse engineers their plan, like Beth said, and then they start saying mine. Well, my commission, my business, my customer. And I want to pivot a little bit, Cassandra, if it's okay with you, to the questions around like house accounts and things like that. Every account really is a house account. I mean, I've told salespeople for years, when you want to go show up in court, when they depose you, when you want to hang a shingle on the door, when you want a personal guarantee, that first line of credit, you can say it's yours. We'll go get the paperwork and you can have it. But really, we are just stewards of the business. And when a business grows, they invest significant resources into the growth and retention of those accounts, or they don't. They leave it all in one salesperson, they pay them a whole bunch of money, and then they really don't, the business hasn't really done the job to secure the relationship with that customer. So businesses that do the right thing and invest in operations people, and that really is a significant investment, right? And 10 years ago, the accounting department didn't have to work in 7 different portals because customers have made getting paid a complete pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Right. So customers have raised the cost of doing business. Like it is different. And so the cost of retaining these customers and growing them and getting sticky with them is different. One of the things I do is I put in breakpoints, and I know that at certain levels it's going to cost me more. And so I just account for that. Mm-hmm. When I do this with Beth, I'm just like, hey, at here, here, and here, this is what I want the yield curve to look like. And this is kind of where I can start recouping some of what I paid out to recruit and get these people. And I just know it's going to cost me more money. For me, I'm really transparent with my staff about that. I say, look, I spend more money here, here, and here. And this is what it looks like for your pay to change. But here's the resources you get for that. So I'm not going back and like stealing overhead. Like, I'm not charging them overhead or making something a house account. We just account for it. We just plan that if it goes to a certain size, you're getting those resources and that's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So we plan for it that way from the beginning. And some of that is like when you have to fix things after the fact, it stings. But if you don't fix those things, you end up with what Ben Horowitz calls, which is a tech debt. Like when you don't fix tech debt, you're going to pay that debt. You end up with management debt.
Mm.
Right? When you do goofy things and you let toxic people sit on your floor, or you cut side deals, and well, I'll pay you on this account because of, you end up with management debt where people mm-hmm. are talking about that, and now you don't have a lot of consistency. It's unfortunate that that's typically when Beth gets the phone call.
So right, how, I've got so many questions. Lily, I have a pad of paper and a pen because I'm like writing because you guys are, okay. First of all, Andrew Thiel says, tolerating toxic employees likely hurts the company more than the toxic employees do in a bubble. And Andrew loves leadership stuff. So I knew I was waiting for him to pop in and say something. Oh, and the Freight Coach is in the house. Hi, Chris Jolly Rancher.
What's up, Chris?
So first, I have a small horror story because I entered into, I worked for this company, or did I consult for them? I can't remember which one. But they had a whole group of carrier sales folks, and a good portion of them were toxic. And they knew the problem existed, but they were making so much money that they didn't care. But one day, one of the top carrier sales reps that had like whole teams working underneath them, we had to fire him. No, actually, I said we are going to fire him because a female did the same thing that he did, and she got fired. And then he pulled the stunt and he didn't get fired. And I sat everybody down and I said, we're going to make a decision right now. We have to fire this person, and or you're just being morons. How do you fix this problem, though? Because I'm just a dumb lawyer. I did what I had to do to protect the company and also illuminate a clear discrimination problem that they had to fix. But how do you fix this toxic environment that's often driven by pay?
Well, I'm going to actually answer KJ. One of the things you've got to have is you've got to have a good recruiter on your team who can give you a constant flow of good people so that you know you can replace the ones that are toxic. I think that's the biggest fear that management has, is there's not going to be somebody who can replace that person. And KJ, I think you could probably call bullshit on that just like I could, right? There's great people out there looking for jobs.
Absolutely. And there's just a comment that kind of went across the screen there too about somebody leaving inside sales and becoming an independent agent. And I'm seeing agent programs pop up all over the place. We're talking about compensation, 100% commission. So not trying to get off topic, but that was a good comment there. And I'm seeing quite a bit of it. So some of that could be as far as leaving a toxic situation, be able to kind of take control, but still leverage up with an organization that provides you with what you need to be able to make a living.
I can kind of relate to that because I'm an independent agent, really. So if that's where you, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, there's some people that that's what they want. Like, go do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great, like, agencies. I mean, I know I have some friends that I used to work with. They have an agency in Arkansas and they run it like their own business. And they have and they're really good at what they do and their employees love them and they get one of those massive splits and they've really turned it into, and that's a great thing for them because they wanted control. So, like, if that's what you want, like, go do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking in the prelim for this, Cassandra, we were talking about 1099 mm-hmm. versus W-2 employee. And I think it's a mm-hmm. good distinction to make, right? There are people who are just not wired to be part of an organization like that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. I couldn't do it. I was on my last straw with the big bureaucracy of corporate.
Yeah, me too.
And if you're like that, then absolutely go be a 1099, but it's a different deal, right? It's a different mm-hmm. deal in terms of what you're expecting from, it's not really your employee. They're really your business partner now. Mm-hmm. Right? So KJ, how do you handle that in terms of letting people know like the difference of what they're going to get?
Good question.
Versus 1099 versus W-2.
Yeah. I mean, I look at agent programs as kind of like franchise light. So there's not usually an upfront cost. It's more like sharing in the gross profit or the revenue. And so, I mean, it's very different. It's a completely different conversation. If it's a W-2 versus an agent conversation, I mean, it starts off differently. The messaging's different. So everything starts at the apex of it being a completely different conversation. So it's more so of taking control and being a business owner, but having kind of a framework already built for you And so I think for the right person, agent programs are fantastic. So I built a couple of them. So, and I've really seen the last 3 or 4 months, I've had probably 11 companies reach out to me trying to build them. So.
Okay. Is it because there's two different types of companies, people who want the agents, right? And I bet Beth knows exactly where I'm getting at, which is we are tired. These employees are costing us so much money. We're managing them. We're paying benefits, blah, blah, blah. Let's just start doing the agent stuff. And then we don't have to worry about discrimination claims. We don't have to worry about benefits. They're on their own. They make money of the down. So we have those people. And then whatever the other reason is for having an agent program, what is the other reason?
I mean, I think it's another sales channel. I mean, you have to invest. I mean, okay. Organizations that see it as, you know, it's free labor or they're just going to transfer or book a business, they're not in it for the right intentions. And I don't think it's going to be successful. I think you really have to put some money in an agent program. And yeah. I think it's another sales channel. It's for that person that doesn't want to go in the office. And with everyone working from home, I see it happening more often lately. So,
and it does go back to leadership, right? Like Trinity is a company that Beth knows really well. I have friends that used to own the family that owned that business, the Bannings, are great people. They have a great agent program. And like, I mean, Billy like really just loves investing in agents and seeing people kind of have their own business and do their own thing. And like he just happened to be really passionate about that model. And so, and they did a good job, but they had an entire program around it. I mean, they did it once a year. They did an annual agent conference and they were really transparent and they were super, they weren't just like, yeah, we're your bank. Here's your 70%. Mm-hmm. Good luck. I mean, they really mm-hmm. did a good job with how they put the model together. Because I had a business where I had agents and was horrible at it. We just didn't have the infrastructure for it. We were a really good mm-hmm. company store and we were bad at supporting our agents. And so I learned in talking to him about it that it's really a different model. And so I think you're right, Cassandra, but there's some people, Bennett's another good shot that I've gotten to know. Like there's some people that's just, they love to do that. They really love the entrepreneurial thing, but they make it an entrepreneurial thing as opposed to saying,
right,
we'll pay you a big commission and it's really entrepreneurial and then get pissed at you when you act like an entrepreneur.
Right. That's a really great way of explaining it.
Two different things. Huh. One is not the other.
It's hard. Go for it, Beth.
Yeah, one of the worst things is when there are W-2 employees, but management is treating them, Cassandra, exactly like what you just said, where it's mm-hmm. like they don't want to bother with managing them. They just want to make money off them. Michael, your old world, right? It's like they don't want to be a leader. They just want to collect money from these people. You can't mm-hmm. run a company with W-2 employees that way.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's, I'm glad you brought that up too. Because we've got the 1099 and we've got the W-2. Having agents, for those out there who are thinking about having agents, make sure that you are careful about how you go about it. Because one of the worst lawsuits or the worst legal problems you can have would be, hey, the IRS or the state or the employee is saying, this individual over here who you've been acting and treating like an agent actually should have been an inside sales employee, and you should have been paying them benefits and you should have been paying payroll taxes. And there is a lot of law that goes around it and you have to be extremely careful with it. And the most popular way of getting busted for this is a disgruntled employee who goes on this website that's very easy and says, I should have been paid as an employee. They managed my time. They controlled everything I did. They treated me exactly like their other employees. And then now you're in trouble. Same with misclassification of employees. And I did look up any companies out there who are looking for a good employment attorney, one that I've worked with in the past. What did I do with her information? It was Kristen. And what I'll do is, oh, here she is, Kristen Johnson. She's with Taylor & Associates in Florida. I know her personally. I love her to pieces. You can Google her name or Amanda Miller will pop it into the comments, her link. And you can go to her for any of these misclassifications, agent programs, should I pay this employee overtime? Should I pay them salary, hourly, all that stuff? Instead of diving into it, I figured I'd give you guys all a good resource to reach out to Kristen Johnson. So we have 350. We have a couple options, right? And Michael, you're the co-host, so you're going to decide what we're going to do. Beth never, I don't know if Beth really got into how do you fix the toxic employee topic. There's one option. Your second option is, let's see, hot jobs in 2021. Pods, are they popular or are they dysfunctional and fucked up? And transitioning to freight tech, it is up to you what you want to do for the next 10 minutes with our beautiful, wonderful talent.
So I think, my initial gut reaction was, let's talk about the toxic thing, because it's not a comp issue. Comp is a piece of it. One of the things that's really, and I think I'd like Beth and KJ to circle back to two things. It ends up being a pipeline problem and an alignment problem. So I'm going to tell a 30-second story, and then I'd like to hear from Beth and KJ. But I know of a big company, big 3PL. We're not talking, you know, we keep getting on this like brokerage thing, but I know a big 3PL. And some of their operations people have real problems delivering primary solutions for the customer. We're talking about big solution design things. Because the way the enterprise salesperson's plan is designed, he can sell different solutions and he gets paid differently based on the cost of the solution that operations implements, based on what system is used or what's delivered. And so the delivery team will be like, well, we need to do this. Yeah, no, I didn't sell that. Do it. And the salesperson is saying, do it this way. Well, guess what? Ops, they hate the sales guy. Okay. Mm-hmm. They talk shit about him all the time. Mm-hmm. And so what happens in these big companies, right? You're looking at top line revenue and you're looking at EBITDA. And so you're looking at like these costs that you can see on a P&L. And those things, like I just described, are costs. They cost the company every day because they erode trust. They create conversations internally that don't need to happen because there's a massive misalignment. And so sometimes people aren't toxic because they set out to be toxic. They're toxic because management just started ignoring things a long time ago.
Oh my God.
They said, well, it's working good enough, so we're just going to keep doing it. And so when it comes to toxic people, I kind of don't want to start with comp. I want to go, hey, man, like, are you just communicating? Now, The second piece is the funnel piece. Like, pipeline's everything, right? Like, in sales and having people. If there are three people behind that person that could easily replace them, it's easier to say, hey man, like I don't have to have you. If you want to act this way. And so I'm going to leave it at that. But like, Beth, you've run through this a lot when you do assessments. KJ, you've seen this a lot. I know when people are trying to hire people and you have to give feedback and go, well, people don't really want to work here. And here's why. Here's kind of the word on the street. And so in dealing with those toxicities, like, I'd like for the two of you to kind of go for a couple minutes on what are people not looking at that they should be looking at? What are they missing that you end up uncovering when you're trying to place talent, and Beth, that you end up uncovering when you're trying to fix it with comp?
Yeah, on the front end, reference checks. Like, most companies don't do them. Well, why not?
Are they worth your time?
Reference checks? I think I've had a lot of the companies that are doing them well, they're passing on some candidates. They've uncovered something that shows some toxicity in their past from a previous employee. And they call their former three bosses pretty systematic. What is your boss's name? How would they rate you? And what's their cell phone number? And they'll call them. And so otherwise, if the candidate's just supplying a few references, a lot of that's fluff. But when companies are a little more strategic about it, they are uncovering some of that.
Oh, our best 5 minutes.
Okay, quick.
Tell me everything you've learned in 20 years in 5 minutes about this.
And then write your book right after this so we can read it.
Right after.
Yeah. When our NDA runs out.
True.
So, Michael, actually, in the example you gave, I say that is a compensation problem, right? So okay. you described it that the rep is being paid to do something in a particular way. And I always say the good news about incentive compensation design is it works. The bad news about incentive compensation design is it works. Right. So you have to be very careful with how you design your incentive plans, because they will do that. Right. They will figure out a way to maximize their compensation. And if you are driving them to do something that is counter to the health of the organization, don't look at me with a surprised look on your face when your organization is screwed up.
Right. You know?
But I get that all the time. Right. I get companies all the time saying, you know what, I don't understand why the people are acting this way. And then I look at their compensation plans and I'm like, it's really not that hard to figure out. You know, they're just doing what you're paying them to do. The other thing that I would say that is a common source of toxicity is bad managers, right? So what's the saying? The fish stinks from the head, right?
The fish rots from the head down.
The fish rots from the head down. Yeah.
Totally using that again.
Yeah. The fish rots from the head down. People follow what their leaders do. Right. And so I have seen all sorts of different types of environments, from like companies where the people are micromanaged. And so everybody is like, has PTSD because they're afraid of getting yelled at all the time. And so they spend all their time figuring out how to CYA, because you know, when he comes and yells at me, I'm going to make sure that I've got somebody else that I can blame. And I've seen organizations where there's just no accountability, where management doesn't care. Management doesn't even show up half the time. So of course, then the inmates are running the asylum in that world of leadership. But when you've got an organization where the leaders are passionate and involved and committed, right? This is not something you can do on a whim, right? Mm-hmm. If you're deciding to run a company and you're deciding to hire people, they are putting their lives in your hands, you know, literally. They are putting their livelihoods and their families and everything in your hands. You cannot treat it as a part-time job. You have responsibility to those people to take care of them and to treat them right. And sometimes that means letting them go. Sometimes that means this isn't the right organization for that person. And you have to, you know, man up and say, you need to go. And they're going to end up being better for it, because they're going to find something else that's going to fit them better. But have that accountability, have for yourself as a leader. That's what I would say.
That's powerful. I love Andrew Thiel's comment. I don't know why he doesn't just run this entire show, but if the company's reputation is poor, all you get are candidates that didn't do research ahead of time. Not good. Ends up a cycle. Poor recruits perpetuate poor culture/orgs. And I'm already thinking of one big company in our industry that has really bad reputation, and yet they still keep getting people recruited in it, and it baffles me. So I know that if we have literally 3 minutes, Michael, this is going to be sprung on you, if that's the right word for it, which is, could you tell me a little bit about the dysfunctional pod thing? The good versus, can you do it in 3 minutes?
Well, give us
a tidbit and we can bring you back.
Two things in 3 minutes. Okay, so let's talk about one thing people are sending off in the comments about when people raise the bar so high. And then we talked about this with non-competes. We really wanted to kind of talk to leaders today. If you work for a shitty company, call KJ and quit the company.
Yeah,
sometimes people do bad things with compensation. They raise goals. They game the plan. I have a friend that I kind of coach, and every time I talk to him, I'm like, quit your job.
Mm-hmm.
I know 4 people that would hire you. Stop bitching and quit. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, bye. Okay, so pods. So here's the thing about pods. Pods can be really great, because what we have is, and I'm going to overgeneralize, what you have is cradle to grave, buy, sell. Everybody wants to be Jeff Silver and American Backhaulers and pick, which, name your company, right? Carbon copy that. And then you have the middle, which is we'll kind of have a team. Pods are great when there's definition, role alignment, everybody's compensated, everybody in that team knows what to do. Pods go bad typically when there's one big earner in that team that is given resources that he then takes long lunches and just kind of craps all over, he or she, and nobody knows who does what, but he or she gets paid a whole bunch of money because they have the big accounts.
Oh my God.
That's typically when pods go bad. But when you go, what's the goal? How do we align those goals? How do we pay people? Does everybody on that team know? Pods are, I run my business that way right now, that they're great. Uh-huh. But when you have a big top earner and you go, hey, just keep growing. And you've got 3 people making 40 and they're making 160 and he's at the golf course. That's when pods are bad. Is that kind of right, Beth?
That is 100% right. And you way underestimated the pay differential there. It's 3 people making 40 and 1 person making $500,000 or more. It is horrible.
Why even call it a pod? Just say you're in a support role for a salesperson. No.
But it's back to management abdicating responsibility.
Yeah, it is. It's management abdicating responsibility. And it is, there's no culture. right? So there's no overarching company culture in that world. Mm-hmm. What you have is each one of those pods becomes like its own little company and its own little silo. And from a leadership standpoint, guess what you've just built? You've just built a little group that can go off and leave you and do their own thing and start their own brokerage, right? If
I know a company that is that.
Right.
Bunch of those people.
Oh, I do left, too.
And they are a whole company.
I bet they're the company.
Well, there have been tons of them. There have been tons of them that have done that. If the people on the pod can stand the person that they're working with, mm-hmm. which most of them can't. But I, for a long time, I did not want to do any pods whatsoever. I would counsel my clients against them because all I had seen were the toxic versions. Mm-hmm. And then I started to see ones that were better. And I'm like, okay, it really is about role definition. Like I said at the beginning, it's role definition and it's making sure that you are aligning the compensation plan to create a good system within that little teamwork and not making it so that there's one superstar and everybody else is just in support of that person. Because that's
and then it's recruiting the right people to stay, to fit in that culture.
Yeah.
Because some people don't do well. They need to go be agents. And so you got to call mm-hmm. KJ and figure out how to get the right people to fit that model.
That makes sense.
The first time Beth and I made a big change, we realized that we didn't have the right people to work in the culture we were trying to create. It wasn't going to work because they weren't the right people.
This is so powerful. This is by far one of the best episodes. I'm even taking notes. Someone had said, I think it was Matt Fink, whom I love. I swear he said this panel needs a weekly podcast. No joke. Too much legit high level stuff not to share. Smart mechanical experience. We want to work for all of them. I love it, Matt. That's exactly what I was thinking. You guys, you're amazing. You have KJ who's recruiting. We have Michael who's our expert. Michael, don't you have something else going on too?
I do.
I've worked with you for so long. I forget.
I run a brokerage for a company called Port City Logistics. Love those guys. And then I've really been coaching and helping people for 10 years or so. So I do a little bit of that on the side.
They're lucky to have
you. And early, I love working with founder-led companies that are trying to figure this out mm-hmm. and get it right from the beginning. So I work with a few founders on kind of how to lay the groundwork and get these things right in the beginning.
I love it. And then we've got Beth, our compensation expert, who I really feel like brings us back to our fundamentals, helps us grow our company in the right direction for longevity. And we need all three to make this work. So it's just a man. Mike, a freak coach, says Michael is an international man of mystery. I love it. By the way, Chris Jolly got very excited when we started talking about pods. I have a feeling that he's going to message you and go on a pod rant. Thank you for JJ Keller and Swan Lee for making this episode possible. Thank you to Amanda Miller, who's absolutely amazing. She's always here supporting us while she's obviously managing a gazillion flatbed trucks out there. So thank you so much. And you guys have a great weekend.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for